The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Koutou, no mai, hare mai ki, Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's food podcast. Each month we get together and eat and drink delicious things and chat with the buzziest people in New Zealand food. Welcome to episode 4 of season 2, a Christmas special. Meri kirihimiti. Ko Simon Day, toko ingawa, and in the studio I'm joined by Alice Neville, the Spinoff's food editor. Kia ora, Alice.
Kia ora, Simon. Meri kirihimiti.
Ooh, your pronunciation is better than mine. Unfortunately, our third host, Big Boss food entrepreneur Sophie Gilmore of Delicious Business, cannot join us today. She gave birth to her gorgeous daughter Odette 5 days ago. Congratulations, Sophie.
Yay.
It's very exciting to have another Gilmore woman in the world.
It's a pretty good excuse to not be here 5 days ago, although, you know.
She almost came as well. Yeah. She was very close to the two of them joining us. And it's very buzzy to think back to a year ago when we were eating and drinking in the sun at the hunting lodge, recording live from the field. Now Sophie has a daughter. I've got twin boys due in 4 weeks. The podcast won an award, and we have another year of eating and drinking live on air in the can.
And I'm just the same.
I wasn't going to bring it up, Alice. But in the last 12 months, you have done things like recorded 2 podcasts with Al Brown and lost one.
True.
We recorded live from ice cream mecca Duck Island. We've set off the fire alarm and been banned from cooking in the studio. We've interviewed a hangi master, belittled white people food with Pax Asadi. We've eaten crickets, cooked tardig, rated New Zealand's hot cross buns with Sophie's entire family. We've stuffed peanut slabs into pepper steak pies with Albert Cho. We've drank mezcal sake and natural wine at the same time. And we've tasted New Zealand's first carbon neutral beer, among many, many other things. And so today we have a very special guest who has basically made all of that happen, Hilary Pearson, the general manager of Freedom Farms, the sponsor of the podcast and all the Spinoff's food podcast. Thank you for joining us, Hilary.
Oh, thank you for having me, Simon.
It's our real pleasure. This is where I'd usually try and capture Freedom Farms' purpose in 2 sentences, but I'm sure you can do that much better than I can. Can you explain why Freedom Farms exists and how the model works and what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. So I've actually been working on our elevator pitch recently and it's not going great, so I'll do my best. So Freedom Farms started about 13 years ago by 2 brothers, Gregor and Cameron Fife, who prior to that were part of EcoStore. Gregor is a massive bacon fan and was going into the supermarkets and sort of scratching his head wondering where all of the well-farmed New Zealand bacon was, because it certainly wasn't on the shelves. So they did a bit of digging, realised that there were farmers out there doing really great work, but all of that pork was going into the commodity supply in New Zealand, which meant that the farmers weren't getting recognised for the really great work that they were doing. No one was getting paid fairly to do the extra work that comes with farming in a way that we felt really good about. So it's sort of grown from there. So now, 13 years later, we have Freedom Farms, obviously pork, on supermarket shelves, alongside Freedom Farms bacon, ham, lots and lots of hams going out at the moment for Christmas.
Yeah, it must be a really busy time of year.
Yeah, super fun time of year though. Lots and lots of sausages. I think kicking into the summer season, we're seeing a pretty strong uptake on those, and free range eggs as well, which is another very exciting part of our business with some very, very cool farmers. So, yeah.
What made the pork industry especially needy for this introduction of Freedom Farms?
Yeah, so the pork industry has sort of seen a pretty significant downturn over the last 20 years. The increase in imported pork coming into New Zealand has really played a big part in that. So at the moment, around about somewhere between 50 and 60% of the pork we consume in New Zealand is grown here, which means the rest of it is brought in from countries overseas. Often countries that don't have the same sort of welfare standards that we've implemented in New Zealand as sort of a baseline. That gets even scarier in bacon. So sitting around about 80% of the bacon that we see on the supermarket shelves comes from countries of unknown origin, which
crazy.
It is crazy. It's sad too, you know. Like, I think that in 2019, going into 2020, when we're having all of these conversations around food miles and all of that stuff, bacon seems to be lagging a little bit in the way that's changing. It will change next year with country of origin labelling requirements starting to come in. We're just waiting on those draft regulations, which hopefully we'll see before Christmas, but I'm at this point not holding my breath.
When is that supposed to start officially?
So the regulations have to be all finalised, I think, in June next year.
Yeah.
So that window is sort of shrinking now in terms of the time that we have to negotiate to make sure that they are really, really robust.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's sort of the big risk, is that it's taken so long to see country of origin become part of the legislation in New Zealand. But there is still opportunity for that to be really watered down in a way that's not really meaningful for a consumer, or it's not clear enough for a consumer still standing in the supermarket. But that's where Freedom Farms, I think, is a really cool proposition, because, you know, when people are buying our products, we know that they come from the same farmers that we know and love. That's really consistent always in New Zealand. So, yeah.
So I had the really cool opportunity to go down to the South Island and meet Helen Andrews and look at the way that she and Mark, her husband, farm. Can you tell us a little bit about what the standards are for Freedom Farms, what you're asking of your farmers, why it's different, and why that's important?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the baseline that people, I guess, want to understand about Freedom Farms is that we are 100% supporting New Zealand farmers. So that's you know, there's no negotiation.
It's a really good place to start.
It is. It's a very good place to start.
Especially with bacon.
Yeah, absolutely. And so from there, there are sort of conversations around crates and cages. Since we started, we've seen sow crates become illegal in New Zealand, so no one's using those now. Farrowing crates are still widely used in indoor intensive farms in New Zealand.
What are they? What are the differences?
So farrowing crates are they're the crates that the sow goes into just before she gives birth. She gives birth to her piglets in there, and is essentially confined on there. So piglets have full access to her teat so they can feed. The really strong argument from the indoor farmers, obviously, is that a sow, you know, relatively easily rolls on top of her wee piglets and can crush them. So, you know, that's something that has to be worked through. But obviously, we strongly believe that pigs should be able to display their natural behaviours in terms of all of those motherly instincts. So even things like before sows give birth, they've got a strong instinct to build a nest. So with the Freedom Farms, sows, when they're out about to farrow or out about to give birth, they've got their own little sheds in the paddock, and they'll go in there and they'll build their nest with their straw, and they get to do all of that stuff.
Something very cute about a pig building a nest.
It is quite cute. Well,
pigs are so cute. Pigs are so gorgeous. I was really touched when I got to see them all running around at Helen's farm, and this personality to them. I love it.
There is personality to them. I think the thing that I find kind of incredible is that a sow about to give birth, or a sow who has recently given birth, is not a cute proposition. No. They're fiercely protective of their babies.
I remember when I approached one of the sows who at that point was looking after her new piglets.
Yeah.
I think the correct verb was to bark at me.
Yeah.
And she really let me know that I was up in her space. And
absolutely.
That, you know, if I don't watch myself, you'll be told about it.
Absolutely. And I think I really love watching our farmers when they're chatting away, because you often see them out there when we're wandering around having a look on the farms. And the farmers know what to say to calm their sows and to keep that all in line. So it's super cool.
Cool.
So five freedoms, I think, is a principle that a lot of people who are familiar with animal welfare are familiar with. So that's freedom from hunger and thirst, so making sure that the pigs get a diet that's really species appropriate, not getting waste food, continuous access to clean, fresh water all the time. And then there's freedom from discomfort, freedom from pain, injury and disease, freedom to express normal behaviour, which from my perspective is the most important thing. That's what I really want to see, the pigs getting to be pigs. And freedom from fear and distress too, which often comes down to the stockmanship. So it's the way that people working on the farm are managing and talking to the animals and making sure that they're not getting wound up unnecessarily. So beyond that, the Freedom Farm Standards also call for some environmental management. So I'm sure you experienced the joys of the enriched compost, Simon, when we're visiting Helen's farm. The deep straw shelters where all of the growing pigs reside are all lined with a deep straw lining, which absorbs all of their manure, which keeps that out of the paddocks, keeps the waterways clean, you know, keeps the soil in really good shape, and provides this wonderful resource for all sorts of other applications too. So we've got enriched compost, which has got the straw composted into it, going out to, there's some retail compost applications for that. So some of those people can buy in stores like The Warehouse. On the layer hen farms, all of that goes to local growers, so local horticulture, take all of the waste out of the chicken sheds, the barns at the end of the day. It's a really good sort of cycle, I think.
That's a part I found really interesting was, you know, we hear a lot about free range.
Mm-hmm.
And these pigs aren't free range. They're living inside a shelter.
Yep.
Which makes huge amounts of sense in this situation, because it prevents any of their effluent ending up in the waterways.
Yep.
They're still in an environment where they're free to move and socialize with their friends. It wasn't crowded in any way. And then it also prevents anything like, bad weather affecting their happiness.
Absolutely.
And it creates that holistic sort of life cycle of a farm where you can create more products, and that was really, really impressive.
Yeah.
I think you have words and understandings of things in your mind, but when you're raising animals to be eaten, to make money,
mm-hmm.
but also to be environmentally friendly and at scale,
yeah,
it just made so much sense.
I think that's what it comes down to is the scale. So, you know, we set out initially Freedom Farms. Gregor and Cameron could have gone and bought a little farm and set up a little farm that sort of met all of the values that they thought were really important, they felt really good about, and perhaps sold through farmers markets or done, followed that sort of roadmap. And lots of people do and have followed that roadmap really successfully in New Zealand. But it was important for us that we were making something that we really, really felt proud of, available in every supermarket in the country. And that's where we really want to see the change sort of keep growing and evolving, is the ability for every New Zealander to buy this sort of quality of produce. So,
cool. So Hilary, Christmas must be crazy for you. How many hams do you move at this time of year?
Christmas starts ramping up sort of around Labour weekend. I start getting phone calls from people who are looking for Freedom Farms hams.
Bullshit.
Which is really good. No, Labour weekend it starts.
Be prepared.
Oh, and I bet you get calls on Christmas Eve as well.
Christmas Day. I cleared some voicemails last year from Christmas Day. The delightful, I've got this ham here. What should I do with it now?
Oh, my gosh.
It's where Google
Check
comes
out
in hand.
The spinoff.co.nz if you're finding yourself without the knowledge of what to do with your ham on Christmas Day. With the help of Hilary, we've put together some really nice recipes that we'll talk about in a minute. And some guidance, which is important.
Yes. Yeah. And we've got the video from last year, of course, of Sophie and her mother, Emerald.
Super good fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so over the Christmas period, around about 25,000 hams will go out into supermarkets all over the country. There are varying sizes, so they're not literally 25,000 whole legs of ham. Yeah. We're seeing a lot more interest this year in the smaller format. So the smaller quarter champagne hams have been really popular this year, and we're starting to hear people say, well, I've got one for my book club Christmas dinner, and then I've got one for my work do, and so it's that sort of like smaller scale hams, which are exciting because I always find it really daunting if you end up with a whole leg of ham sort of that can feed 60 people. There's only so many leftovers. Like, don't get me wrong, love ham leftovers, but, you know, if you're feeding a family of five and you've got enough for 60, that's a lot of leftovers to get through. So, yeah, so lots and lots of those smaller ones are getting people's interest this year, which is cool to see.
I've always wanted to know, what is champagne ham? Is it a pig that's been drinking a little bit of bubbles throughout November?
Pretty
or?
Sure that would just contravene some welfare standards. To
just a glass
exposed.
Or two throughout the early summer?
No, champagne ham doesn't contain champagne, so I'm really sorry about that. So it's a partially deboned ham that's sort of been massaged back into shape. So it's a perfect option. If you don't have much room in your fridge, you don't want to deal with a whopping great ham. The champagne ham's a slightly smaller format and far easier to carve too. So if you're not into that whole sort of performance.
Unwieldy.
Yeah.
So why is it called champagne ham?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay, I'm gonna ask old Mr. Google.
I have to Google that one.
Yeah.
Right now?
Yep.
We'll hold our breath while Alice finds out.
Keep talking.
So my guess is that it's a way of referring to the, like, it being upper quality.
Oh, yeah.
So that's my guess. You find out the truth.
You could argue that it almost looks like a whole champagne ham, almost looks
like a champagne bottle.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
What is a champagne bottle called again? It has a special name.
Don't know.
You can Google that as well, Alice. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not helping.
Uh-oh.
But while I look, is this a good time to mention that we actually are giving away a ham?
It's a great time to mention.
So please email me. Last podcast I suggested you send ham puns, but I think that scared people off. So if you don't want to send ham puns, I understand, although I'd still love them. Just email Alice Neville, AliceNeville, at thespinoff.co.nz. Just put ham in the subject line and I'll know what you mean. You do have to pick it up, though, either from Parnell in Auckland or Morningside in Auckland, but it's worth it.
Champagne ham. Hilary, you helped us put together our recipe story for this week for three alternative ham glazes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk us through them? Well, let's start with the Negroni and then we can have a drink because we've got some Negronis to make as well. What did this taste like and what was the inspiration?
The inspiration was a fair bit of enthusiasm for drinking Negronis in our office.
I love drinking the same thing that I'm cooking with, like,
yeah, it's, you know, it's the a pretty good time. It didn't appeal hugely to me because I don't drink, so for me it was more the citrus notes that I got super excited about, because the citrus goes so well with ham. I think it's a flavor profile too, the citrus with ham, that people get really familiar with. But it's, I think, a more exciting option than chucking a jar of marmalade on your ham, which is can be a little bit sort of flat and one-dimensional. So Negroni, I think, was a really cool flavour. I think a lot of people quite enthusiastic about it. I've heard a lot of people tell me that they like the Negroni more than they like the ham, so that's great. But it does. The other great thing about this glaze is because it doesn't have chunky bits in it, you can kind of like shellac up this kind of beautiful, glossy, rich looking ham, which I really, really like. And the colour comes up pretty cool.
It does look beautiful in the pictures.
Yeah. So that was the thinking behind that.
Yeah. So we've got a quarter of a cup of gin, a quarter of a cup of Campari, a quarter of a cup of sweet vermouth, half a cup of caster sugar, one tablespoon of brown sugar, and a quarter of a cup of low pulp orange juice. So simple as well. Like, all the glazes are actually really simple, which is what I love.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, too, glazes, people tend to get a little bit too excited about things. You know, we don't want to drown the beautiful ham because the ham, you know, has got a sweetness and sort of a saltiness to it that is just such a pleasant experience to eat on Christmas Day. And I think as long as people too are thinking about those balancing those flavours with glazes, which I think kind of goes a little bit by the wayside when you get excited about your, you get excited, well, lots of people get really excited about their jar of marmalade and their dollop of mustard and those sorts of quite old school glazes can be really problematic too. I think we find often with the mustard, especially like the more American style mustards that we're seeing in the supermarkets now, they're really salty. So you've got to be super careful if you are using a mustard in your glaze. Just make sure that you're tasting it and double checking it to not overwhelm with that saltiness. But keeping in balance the sweet, salty, sour, bitter and umami flavours sort of really elevate the ham.
One thing I wrote about was cloves. Oh.
Not into the cloves, are you?
Not at all. They take so long.
Yeah, true.
A certain someone calls for 70 cloves in your ham.
That's a lot. So
then they find their way into your mouth.
Yeah, that's never a good time. The cloves do. There are some people who argue that the cloves serve a functional purpose, and that's where you put them in. So when you make the crisscross cuts on the ham, if you put the cloves in sort of the intersection of the two cuts, then it stops the glaze all sliding off. So you get a better crust of glaze on your ham, which is, I prefer just to repeatedly apply the glaze to the ham rather than sort of...
Yeah, I quite like the look of cloves in a ham, I'm not going to lie, but then I don't actually eat the ham, so it's more just...
You could eat the cloves.
I've helped stud them in and I feel helpful. Yeah.
Isn't it cloves that you used to stick in a sawtooth?
Yes, I was just thinking.
I've never heard that.
Yeah,
I had.
Apparently,
they stick a clove in your sawtooth.
Away you go.
How do you stick a clove in the side of a?
I can't remember. I don't know, but I definitely have heard that.
I'm sure my grandmother used to tell me that you put them in a cavity, and then got a bit older, and I was thinking about it, being like, "What's going on in your mouth that you've got a cavity big enough to put a clove in?" Just go to the dentist.
Please,
it's like a homemade filling.
Yeah,
it's interesting those health applications of food. I had olive oil put in my ears by a doctor on Tuesday.
How'd that help relieve
vertigo migraines.
Oh wow!
And loosen up. Some dense earwax, apparently.
Mm.
Excuse me, listeners.
Then did it drain out and you took it home and cooked with it?
No, I made a candle.
Then that's even better.
With my earwax. No, I didn't. but I'm feeling much better, which is good. I had a week of dizzy spells.
Yeah, so. last week Simon was sort of looked like he was dead on the couch at work for a whole day, and I thought he was hungover.
Came to work to go to sleep.
Yeah. It's amazing migraine cures. I've had migraines for most of my life, and the things that people come up with, like, just do this.
Stick a clove in it.
Whiskey is the most common.
Whiskey.
That sounds like a bad idea.
It's a terrible
idea. Have you tried
idea.
Espresso, though? My sister reckons.
Yeah. Caffeine, supposed
if you feel
to.
It coming on, you quickly down like a couple of short blacks. And apparently that's based in
Because what happens
science.
Is it thins
I
your blood.
I drink so much coffee, I can probably
you're
change
always
it maybe
headed.
Not working.
Yeah.
But that's why you get coffee headaches, is because if you're a big-time coffee drinker, it thins out your blood quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then your body responds by tightening your arteries.
Oh.
And so if you don't have that morning coffee to thin your blood, not enough blood is getting to your brain, so it's getting there.
It's got quite scientific quite quickly.
I wrote a story about it. It's exactly the same problem that happens to cocaine addicts. It's the same.
I just feel bad about myself.
You're an addict.
Yeah, it's all legal.
Going back to Champagne Ham,
mm-hmm.
The Daily Mail, that trustworthy source, says it was originally called Champagne Ham because it was served at celebrations.
Oh, that makes sense.
Which is, But then a few other ones just say because of the presentation, it's because it looks nice or something. I don't know. Who knows?
So the second glaze is a tamarind and ginger glaze. This has a little bit of Asian tinge to it in my...
Tamarind is one of those weird sort of incredibly ubiquitous fruits that occur, like pretty much everywhere along the equator has tamarind of some form in their cuisine. So whether it's South American or a little bit of Mexican cuisine gets into there. Tamarinds, Southeast Asia, really big on it, and Indian cuisine as
what
well.
What does a tamarind look like? I only see it as
it's a
paste.
Weird pod.
Yeah,
it's
you can
like
buy the pods at some places.
Yeah, so.
And can you eat it fresh?
Well, yeah, you must be able to. So Drew, who I work with, he's our resident foodie, He's just got back from a holiday in Thailand, and he was saying that they were making cocktails with fresh tamarind. And he was lying next to the pool looking up at this canopy of trees, which turned out were tamarind trees. And they were just lopping the fruit off the tree and putting it as a cocktail, which is not a bad way to spend.
I love the taste of it.
Yeah. So it's, nice, it's an incredibly
sour,
sort of
weird. Yeah.
It's kind of like a whole tongue experience.
Yeah. So this is what this glaze appears to have, is that sour, almost spiciness of the ginger, and then the sweetness because it's been turned into a chutney.
Yeah, and mixed in with the beautiful Hackanoi ginger syrup, which is, I guess, in my house, it's kind of becoming the go-to ingredient for all things.
Nice.
Whether you're chucking it in your soda or in your stir fry, I think that's it's a really, really versatile product. So it creates a really good sticky base for this glaze, which is what you want. So you've got to have sugar in your ham glaze for it to do the glazing thing properly. I had a phone call a couple of years ago from someone who was trying to make a Coca-Cola or a cola-based glaze, and they'd chucked a bit of the old diet in the glaze, and it just wasn't doing it, and they'd ruined their ham, and it was a miserable thing. So if you're looking at the cola options for your glazes this year, the Karma Cola one caramelizes up beautifully.
Full strength.
No zero.
Yeah, definitely no zero.
No zero.
I really find it hilarious that you get all these ham SOSs.
Yeah.
It's probably the coolest part of your job.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of the conversations I have with people are amazing. Like, I feel really privileged. I had a guy the other day who was an older gentleman who was on the phone because his doctor had told him that he needed to stop eating red meat so much, because he was telling me about how he was a very big red meat eater, and obviously it was a big no-no for him. So he'd gone and bought some pork scotch fillets, and he wanted to know what to do with them. So it's quite good fun to have conversations like that with people where you can really sort of introduce them to the joys of seasoning their meat and whacking it in a pan. And we talked a little bit about making a little pan sauce at the end, which is always a good time. So,
and a sign of a beautiful company, I think, where the general manager is the one taking those phone calls.
Yeah, well, we're a very little team. So I think people don't quite comprehend when they call Freedom Farms that there's only four of us. So the chances of getting me are relatively high.
We should put Gregor's cell phone number on the website.
No.
Like how yours is on the spin-off. The only phone number on the spin-off episode is Simon.
Well, I'm just the only one who's too lazy to eventually take it off. Everyone's learned the error of their ways. So I just log on to the spinoff.co.nz about page, and you can give me a call. No one came to see me at the Parnell Farmers Market.
Aww.
We'll see if anyone gives me a call. The Hakanoa woman is actually at the Parnell Farmers Market.
Yeah, Rebecca. She's
so
super
cool.
So
go and see Rebecca.
Her and Roger run a really cool little company. They've won a few foodie awards too, which is cool.
Deservedly so.
So does Jenny over in Waiheke that makes the tamarind chutney.
So the recipe is 150 millilitres of Jenny's tamarind chutney and 150 millilitres of Hakanoa ginger syrup.
It doesn't even need to be 150. It's just a 50-50 split. So if you get really excited, I'm prone to doing this. We've got a really little loin ham, which is sort of like a 500-gram little format, which is perfect if you're heading off to the beach or want to make, you know, something a little bit special.
Mini ham.
You can whack a little bit of glaze on that too. So with that, it's like 2 tablespoons of each and you're away, which is super cool. And if you want to scale it up, it's very straightforward.
I even want to put that on like a leg of lamb.
Get into it with everything.
Oh, can't wait for Christmas now.
Not long to go, Simon.
I know,
14
actually,
sleeps.
Yeah.
We're 15 sleeps.
Shocked.
No, 14 sleeps.
Soon, anyway.
Yeah.
Have you done your Christmas shopping?
I'm going away for Christmas, so I'm not doing any shopping.
Sweet. I've only bought presents for my sister's dogs. That's the only Christmas shopping I've done. Priorities, you know?
That's very on brand.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the children haven't got.
They'll get something. Yeah, there's so many of them.
So
five nieces and nephews.
The final recipe is, you know, feels a little bit more traditional, but
yep.
similarly is literally spiced up a bit.
Yep.
Who made this up?
So that is an amalgamation of a couple of UK recipe glazes. I think we tinkered with the frozen cranberries, the thing that we don't really get fresh cranberries in New Zealand. So the frozen ones pop up in the supermarkets in around about mid-November. I think maybe some of them carry stock through the year, but that's definitely when they really start to appear.
Yeah, they're good, the frozen cranberries. I put them in my Christmas pudding,
yeah,
which I still haven't made, but I will. It's a kind of one you can make quite close to Christmas. So.
Yeah, well, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Christmas food traditions are so interesting. I think we talked about it last year.
Yeah,
and
I think we did.
I think I've done a full circle and was hating on Pākehā New Zealand Christmas traditions last year. And after Christmas Day, I realised how much I enjoy them, except for fruitcake. I'm not huge on fruitcake.
Oh, see, I'm into it. I love a bit of cheeky bit of fruitcake.
So my grandma's meringues are just so much better than fruitcake for dessert.
I just like having it in the cupboard and you have about 3 slices a day just because.
Fruitcake's just a grazing.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of something that you'd have after the war when, you know, that lasted a really long time.
But if you get one that's
and energy and
got heaps of booze in, then it's, you know.
Natural preservative.
Exactly. Oh,
there you go.
Like a real moist, rich, boozy fruitcake is nice.
Because this recipe reminds me a lot more of, you know, like a dull London day and maybe some snow.
Well,
and
part of it too is that I don't know if people think that I'm a heathen for saying this, but I think that turkey is hugely overrated and kind of ridiculous.
Fuck turkey. Like, I'm happy to say that.
A lot of people, I don't think many people actually genuinely love turkey. You know, it's just the thing that
it's got novelty factor.
It's so hard to cook well. It just dries out.
Yeah.
We actually, my aunt on the family WhatsApp tried to cancel all meat this Christmas and, you know, as an acknowledgement of climate change, as like a statement. Yep. And thankfully that was vetoed because my mum had already ordered the ham. But it did result in the turkey being put to bed forever. So hopefully there is no more turkey our family Christmas. But hopefully
maybe I'll suggest that to my family that we go meat free. My dad, I tried to get him like a vegetarian sandwich the other day and he didn't even want that. So I reckon this might be a hard ask.
It's really interesting. We've been writing a lot about the, you know, the movement towards less meat. And I'm sure it's something that's really important in your world to think about, because I know that it's about eating less but better meat.
But better, yeah. So I think that that's the thing that, you know, I feel really strongly about is that, you know, we're seeing all of the plant-based alternatives and stuff coming through, and they are an exciting proposition for a lot of reasons, not least of which, if you're a person who loves burgers, then you don't need to do your beef burger or your beef and bacon burger 5 nights a week, because you can do your Beyond Burger and you can get into your crumbed mushrooms, and you know, like, there's lots of different options, and it's just getting people to sort of think about things a little bit differently. It's a really tricky subject because New Zealand is, you know, we're pretty much an agricultural nation. We've been in the agriculture space since long before Pākehā arrived in this country, and we've got to figure out a way to sort of reclaim our pride in what we do and how we do it. And I've thought about that a lot, actually, you know, over the last 12 months, especially this idea that, you know, we are hugely critical at the moment of farmers who are stepping over the line in terms of their environmental footprint and how they're managing things. I think there's a lot to be said for, rather than negating things or shouting them down, it's just supporting something better. I think that's the fastest way that we're going to achieve change, is by actually, you know, coming up with some options that we do feel really proud of and supporting them.
Because, like, if we suddenly decided that petrol was illegal tomorrow, our society would collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, if we cancelled meat tomorrow in New Zealand, our economy would fall to pieces.
I think our culture would struggle a little bit too.
At the Sustainable Business Network Awards 2 weeks ago, I was going to the toilet and there was 2 staff in there and the entire menu was vegan? Vegetarian?
Vegetarian. Was it?
I think there was large portions of vegan but also vegetarian.
Oh, you know, because there was paneer and some of the curries.
And some cheeses at the end.
Yeah.
And there were 2 of the catering staff in the toilet at the same time. Thankfully, they washed their hands. but they were talking about how that if they don't eat meat, they get depressed. So there is a really big cultural bridge to cross as we, you know, transition to less meat, better meat, and really think about those farmers who are making it.
Who are out there doing the hard yards. And they are doing the hard yards at the moment too. Let's be clear that being a farmer in New Zealand in the face of some of our recent climate or weather events is a pretty hard time. So,
I have so much respect for farmers because there's so much outside their control.
Yeah.
They're incredibly skilled and knowledgeable, often generations of knowledge.
Absolutely.
Yet they are at the hands of God so often.
It's a really, really tough road for a lot of them. I think that's something that that I've thought a bit about, you know, with social media, is that perhaps the coolest thing about social media is it is making a lot more farmers more accessible to people. So if you're on Instagram and you follow the NZ Farmers handle, you know, they've got a really cool roundup each week of farmers doing amazing stuff. And if you really want to see, you know, farmers out there, you know, I get a little bit jaded by seeing the farmers with their stock still in waterways and all of that stuff. So if you want to celebrate our farmers doing cool stuff, there are lots of opportunities to do that.
That's cool. And there's so many good, you know, good stuff happening around regenerative farming and
Absolutely, just changing
the model of it.
I think too with the sort of regenerative movement, which is growing, I've got this thing of, you know, there are a few people out there who polish their halos perhaps a little bit too hard in the environmental space because, you know, being sustainable isn't a box that you tick. It's a decision that farmers and everyone else, for that matter, makes every day to try and do things the right way.
Yeah.
And, so the regenerative movement, I think probably at this point in time can be seen as a bunch of discrete farming activities. There are some, you know, truly regenerative farmers coming through in New Zealand. I think I'm really excited about seeing them become more mainstream over the coming few years. So,
and it tastes better as well. From a really selfish, short term perspective, it tastes so different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the cranberry glaze, I'm going to go through the recipe as I quickly bring it up on my phone. 2 cups of frozen cranberries, 1/4 cup of runny honey, 3 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, which I think everyone needs to have in their cupboard all the time.
I totally agree.
1/2 cup of brown sugar, and the spice, 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. Just use a pinch or omit if this scares you. The heat just balances out the sweetness. It's not supposed to be spicy. This is where I went wrong with Al Brown's ribs.
That's right.
And red teaspoon as tablespoon.
As tablespoon, yeah.
They were so spicy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just need a little bit, I think, especially with honey. A lot of things which have got, you know, honey in them do benefit a lot from just a tiny little bit of heat just to cut through that sweetness. It can be a bit cloying otherwise.
And you can just blitz that.
Yeah, so just chuck it in a pot, reduce it down a little bit, blitz it so that you don't end up with sort of ugly bits of skin everywhere, and away you go. That one, when I was actually cooking it up too, you can build up a super cool crust with that. So I started off with quite sort of a mean, just brush over it, gave it the first bake, and then I think probably every 10 to 15 minutes took it out and just built that up. So by the time we were done, it was quite hearty.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So we're going to take a very short intermission to shake some Negronis.
Woo!
And while you wait, here's more of my voice.
Kia ora, listeners of Dietary Requirements. If you're listening to this, you must love the spin-off. And the best way to show how much you love the spin-off is to become part of the spin-off members. The fund helps keep us free and accessible to all without a paywall.
Hi, I'm Leonie.
I'm Alex.
And along with our friend Michelle A. Court, we bring you On The Rag every month, which you can find at thespinoff.co.nz and on all good podcast providers.
Once a month, we get together in the spinoff studio to reflect on the previous month of news, media, current events, and just life for women in New Zealand. It's a feminist podcast. It's a shrill podcast. And we'd love it if you listened.
It's too loud. As you can tell, we're back with some live Negroni shaking.
It's a beautiful sound.
It wouldn't be Christmas without some cocktails. So when I was reading, we can both shake or stir a Negroni. I'm not sure which is right.
Yeah, because I said to Simon, I didn't think you shook a Negroni, but then I realised I had no idea. I think because when I've had them, when people have made them for me at home, they haven't shaken them. But I think, yeah, probably in bars when you're making a lot.
Have you worked in hospitality, Alice?
Yes, but only in cafes. So I've never made, we didn't offer a Negroni at Nico where I worked. We did have alcohol, but not. I don't know, it was maybe before Negronis were in fashion.
Because they're very en vogue at the moment.
They certainly are, yes.
And I support that. That's
Yeah, they're a good time.
So delicious and refreshing, yet so strong.
So strong.
They do their job very well.
I often have one at the end of a night, and that's... It's like always a bad idea, but it's kind of good because I'm like, okay, I'm done now.
You're done.
Having these reminds me of season 2, episode 3 with Henry Oliver.
Oh, yeah.
After we had about a billion
Negronis. Oh, my God, yeah,
the Metro
that
Awards.
That was dangerous.
And they're really good for remixing as well. I really like a Bolvadere, which is like winter Negroni with... replace gin with
bourbon,
really nice oaky American bourbon. It adds like an extra depth and warmth to it, so you can have an icy cold drink, but on a winter night, so it's really good.
Yeah,
and you were talking about one with Prosecco, Alice.
Yeah, it's called the Negroni Sbagliato, and which means like mistaken Negroni, and instead of gin, it's Prosecco, and it's delicious and a bit, you know. Less, still pretty damn boozy, but not as full on as your classic Negroni. And I think it was made because someone accidentally put Prosecco on, hence it was mistaken.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Is it an Italian drink?
So yeah.
I do wonder how many drinks are just other drinks that were made wrong.
Totally, yeah, probably quite a lot.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It kind of sounds like how Sophie Gilmore, our co-host's husband David, cooks. It's just everything's a kind of a giant mistake.
It must be frustrating.
He's once very drunk cooking carbonara for her birthday because it's her favourite meal, and there was no olive oil in the house. So he thought, Rose's lime cordial. That looks like olive oil. And he fried bacon in Rose's lime cordial.
I don't know that I can endorse that.
No, I
definitely no endorsement. But apparently, even according to Sophie, it was still a legit carbonara experience.
Wow, that's amazing. Hey, good Negroni, Simon.
Oh, it isn't bad. It's all poured
very,
by eye.
Very interesting for my afternoon's work, but
I have to drive a car soon, so I can't have another one. So it's Christmas. Cocktails is one of my Christmas traditions. Mm-hmm. It's when summer first starts to hit you, and you need something more than a beer or a wine. What are your family's Christmas traditions or special Christmas Day meals? My grandma makes a really weird red onion and nectarine salad, which I love, but I don't think anyone else does.
Maybe last year.
It deserves to be raised twice.
Yeah.
It's an odd thing.
I may have mentioned this last year, but I make Nigella's Christmas morning muffins in the morning, which is just like cranberry. I think maybe the original recipe is dried sour cherries, but I just put dried cranberries in because I always have them. And a bit of orange and just like a light, like nice, you know, not like a gross American muffin, like just a little nice light and very easy. And we have them with presents and bubbly.
That's a good way to start the day.
Yeah.
It's very cute. I want to be at Alice's house.
Oh, come around.
Oh, no, there'll be no meat. Oh, no, there'll just be you. There'll be heaps of meat.
There'll be shitloads
Rick
of meat.
Rick will have mad meat.
Yeah.
He'll have a sausage with his muffin.
He probably would. What about you, Hillary?
I don't know what we really have for family traditions on Christmas Day. It's all pretty changeable in my family, depending on who's around. We used to have the most incredible Christmas days with my grandma living in Nainai, and the whole whānau plus anyone else who came along were included in that. Some of my favourite family photos are the ones taken from the end of the table when everyone's got the stupid hats on out of the crackers and those bits and pieces. I think Grandma's brandy sauce was always a highlight of, of that with her pudding, with always with the little coin in it.
Yeah, my grandma did that too.
The coin. But yeah, it's amazing how many Christmas things, or like I talk to a lot of people about Christmas and they've always got like that one person in their family that kind of ties it all together, that does that whole social side of Christmas.
Yeah.
So yeah, we generally do a brunch and then like a late afternoon.
That's a good idea.
Dinner. So brunch is over the years evolved through waffles and pancakes and Eggs Benedict, which is actually Eggs Benedict. It never occurs to me that Eggs Benedict is quite easy to cook for a lot of people, but it really is, because you can just sort of line everything up and it becomes sort of a production line. So that's not a bad option for Christmas morning.
I've seen people poach eggs en masse, which I always thought was hard as well. Like if you get that water spinning.
And you got your big enough pot and...
Well, cafes it's a masterclass.
Yeah.
Watching them do it.
But yeah, that's pretty cool.
So why don't we use Christmas Cook's Corner as a chance to both talk about your tips for hams, Hillary, and you know, we can offer some other thoughts as we go. Talk about how pavlova is a bad idea in places like Auckland. This is all written down, and you can share it with whoever's in the kitchen on Christmas Day at thespinoff.co.nz. But there is some really important tips.
Yeah.
And steps to making sure you get the most out of your ham, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a couple of really important things. One is, do not trim the fat off your ham. That is where the flavour lives. If you take that off your ham, you're going to have a very sad glaze and a very sad ham.
Don't do it.
Like, when you've got that fat and you're cooking it up, it kind of like when it gets the crispiness going on and you've got the texture, it's just, it's a really beautiful part of the whole experience. The other thing is, don't chuck the skin away when you're taking it off. So what you want to do when you've taken the ham out of the plastic wrapper is just run your hand underneath it and just very, very gently separate out the skin from that beautiful fat cap.
But don't throw the skin away.
No, definitely don't throw it away. So you want to keep that preferably in bigger bits, because it gets really messy if you're sort of breaking it up into really little pieces. And you want to take that and line the bottom of your roasting pan with it. And then use that to sort of nestle your ham on top of. Then right before you pop it in the oven, you're going to pop a little bit of water in the bottom of the pan. So you're just sort of touching the ham skin, but not the ham itself. That serves a couple of purposes. The first, and in my opinion, the most important, is that you're not going to burn all of your glaze onto your roasting pan. I do remember that from when I was really, really little too, was grandma's roasting pans leaning up against the washing line because they've been taken outside, you know, with the hose trying to scrub them. So that solves that problem completely. You're not going to have that issue. But the other thing is that you can use some of the pan juices. So, you know, once at the very end of cooking, once some of that glaze has sort of slid off the ham and creates this beautiful glossy, fatty sort of drizzle, I guess.
Oh, I'm getting hungry. Right?
Yeah, for your ham right before you serve it or take it out of the oven. So that works really, really well. And it is... Yeah, you'll get lots of brownie points from the person who's doing the dishes after you've finished your Christmas dinner if your ham pan is not in an absolute state. There are some other tips, like Annabelle Langbein suggests popping the ham in the oven just for a few minutes before you take the skin off, just by heating it up. You can kind of loosen it. I don't like that, just because of the whole feel of putting your hand in something that's kind of like warm. That's not my idea of a good time. But if that works for you, if you're into that, then cool.
Alice, cool. You've got any Christmas tips?
Well, my tip was going to be, I mean, it could be Christmas related, but in the lead up to Christmas, get your knives professionally sharpened. Basically, it's just an all year tip. Because whenever you do, you then think, God, I should have done this a long time ago.
Is it true?
Mine are super blunt at the moment. I'm like, God, I really, and I just keep forgetting.
I'm sure I've read somewhere too that you have less accidents in the kitchen when you've got sharp knives compared to when you've got blunt.
Slide around.
I have read that.
Yeah.
However, I have, but then I am the world's clumsiest person. But when I do get them sharpened, and then I generally always end up cutting myself because I forget. You know, you have to press less hard when you're chopping. Mm.
Do you have any go-to sharpeners?
I go to House of Knives on Mount Eden Road usually, because I'll do it just overnight, whereas some places only do it like once a week. And if you get the wrong day, you have to wait a week.
There's a very earthy looking guy.
$7 maybe?
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. Very earthy looking guy at the Matakana Markets.
Oh,
the
yeah. Saturday. I'm sure he'd be good.
Well, he looks like he'd earthy. Be good. Yeah.
He's, yeah. He looks like a knife guy.
Big time.
Yeah.
I should think of an off the top of my head vegetarian Christmas tip.
What is your vegetarian Christmas focal point?
I usually do. One I've gone back to is doing like stuffed red capsicums because they're
very good at them.
Festive.
They're quite festive.
Yeah. What did I do them hats. For? Yeah.
You made them for Al Brown.
Oh yeah.
The lost Al Brown.
Oh,
tapes.
Those little cute ones. Yeah. Yeah, those are cute. Oh yeah, maybe I should do them this year. Yeah, they were good. Or you can do half capsicums and fill them with like poi lentils and feta or something. Mm. Or just an array of yummy, hearty salads is good for a New Zealand Christmas.
I think you can't go wrong with a good salad.
Yeah. Know,
like good hearty salad.
Yeah.
It's always the saddest thing in the world when you see someone, you know, empty out their bag of mesclun with their quartered tomatoes.
No.
It's
depressing. Yeah.
There's lots more.
There's so much to do with salads. Salads can be like, I'll never forget when I was a vegetarian, it really confused my mother-in-law because I wasn't having that focal point of protein.
Yeah.
I was like, look at everything else you've served. It's so beautiful and delicious. Like I don't necessarily need that slice of lamb or
absolutely. I think the textures that too that you can get in salads you can't really get with a lot of meats.
True.
With the crumbly crispy.
Yeah. And that's a good thing to think about when you're making them, you know, balance.
Nancy Silverton's really big on salads having their own place on restaurant menus, not being a side, it being a salad.
It's
can see why. Hazelnuts are good at Christmas time too. Yeah, toast them up because they're Christmassy, festive.
You can get the children to do the rubber in the tea towel business.
Yes,
and away
that's a
you
good
go.
Point.
What are the? Is it hazelnuts that are smoked up in the street in Europe?
It's chestnuts.
Chestnuts.
Mm, yeah, but that's nice.
It's good fun. I don't think they taste that nice.
No,
but it's kind
of the idea of it. Though.
Yeah, exactly. And the idea is, you know, more important than the taste sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm. So you're not just a pork expert; you're an egg expert.
An expert.
Oh, Alice. I walked into that one. But the one egg tip for Christmas that I've really thrived off that you provided me, Hilary, is don't make pavlova. Just don't
bother. If it's humid.
But it's always humid in Auckland.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I assume we have
a nationwide listeners.
Worldwide?
Yeah. Worldwide, yeah.
We've been contacted from all over the world. So if you're in a dry winter place, you can make a pav.
They fill your boats, but if you're afraid of the old leaky pav, the humidity is not going to do you any favors on that one.
There's nothing worse than a collapsing piece of baking.
Yeah, well, I guess like if you are going to commit to a pav, if that's something you're really into, then you can just smother it in like a whole lot of cream and heaps of fruit and just pretend that it was supposed to be like
buy
that.
It from the supermarket if you're going to do that.
But yeah. A lot of the supermarket ones, I don't know, this is my Freedom Palms hat going back on, not free range eggs.
Yeah,
gotta be super careful.
I never think of labeling when I go down to pre-made stuff.
Yeah. What is it, like 60% of the eggs in this country go on to food service? So,
wow.
That's why it's so cool, you know, the work Safer doing, getting restaurants and hotel chains and stuff to sign up to their pledge to go cage free. It's a really cool movement to tackle those big players.
So why do pavs collapse, but it works better to do a meringue?
Just because of the moisture.
Yeah.
You want that meringue moisture that you have in the middle of a pav. It's just going to sweat all over the place.
What are you looking for when you whip your egg whites? Do you want to be able to tip the bowl upside down, or is that something else?
Isn't that whipped cream?
That's, yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I think just stiff peaks.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be able to tip the bowl
up. But not
up.
Dry. You don't want it to get dry and sort of that sort of almost crumbly texture.
You want a chewy meringue.
Yeah.
You want it stuck in your teeth.
Exactly. Mm. I don't think people should be afraid about adding flavours to the meringues too. So things like the fresh as fruit powders are a really cool option. If you want to swirl some of that through, you don't need to mix it all the way through. You just put a little bit in and give it a good swirl and you get those beautiful sort of colours.
Mm.
You could do it with raspberry and you get almost like a Christmassy looking.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Little meringue.
I believe we may be having some recipes coming up.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Keep an eye on the site.
I love eating mess at Christmas as well.
Oh, yeah, that's good, cool.
You know, fresh fruit, cream,
can't go wrong.
Meringues.
Do you put yogurt in your one?
I haven't before.
Or does that go, does that get into ambrosia?
It's ambrosia. Oh, yeah. I love ambrosia.
I'm really addicted to coconut yogurt at the moment.
Oh,
I think
that's quite common in ambrosia, actually.
Yeah, I reckon that would work really well. I've been, for Sunday breakfast, I've just been doing fresh berries, so strawberries, blueberries, and raspberries, coconut yogurt, and my friend's honey.
Yeah.
And it's so delicious. It's also, like, still a little bit, just a little bit naughty.
Mm. Yeah.
But not as naughty as, like, pancakes or something.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Mm. And has anyone eaten anywhere fun recently?
Yep, I have. Last night, in fact, I went to Barulo in Parnell, Auckland, where I hadn't been before.
Never been to Parnell?
No, I have. I mean, I don't often make a habit of going to that side of the city because it scares me.
Parnell is weird. It's like this it reminds me of Kerikeri in the far north. Like, it's this little sort of society unto itself.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to get to if you're anywhere other than Remuera. like it's got awkward mode, like the port.
It's like, how do you get
You get off
there,
at the port.
Yeah,
or
do you go through Newmarket?
Yeah,
do you
go, like
how
on
the
motorway?
Fuck do you get to Parnell? Yeah.
Like, does anyone know, please? Write in, tell us. How do you get there?
My office is there, so I'm quite happy
so
if
you
people
know
don't
how
know how
there.
To get there.
Yeah.
Just
and once you're there, it's this fascinating place.
It's a really weird little microcosm of Auckland.
It's probably the only suburb that has like a fedora shop.
Oh no, that closed down.
Oh.
But Pasture got a new pop-up thing going in next to it, which is apparently going to be super cool.
Like a fedora pop-up?
No. Uh-huh. It's a bar or something, isn't it?
Yeah, like a cocktail bar.
So like a place you can actually go to Pasture and not spend $1 million and all night, which
literally.
Is, you know, worth doing once in your life or twice.
But and art galleries per capita, there's a lot
of
art galleries.
Than most places. Yeah. It's kind of a weird underperformer, though, Parnell. Like, I feel like it should have more going on than it does. Mm. There's a few shop fronts along there that have been vacant for a solid decade.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's just, yeah.
Mm.
But then a few classics as well that have been feel like they've been there forever. Thai Friends.
Yeah, that's a valid point. Mm. We do have some good restaurants. Jerome's not bad. They do a
Oh, it's better than not bad. Holy,
it's
so
good. Han, I was at Han last week actually. That's a very cool little spot. Really, really quiet. So if you're looking for a quiet place for your work do or whatever, then Han's a good time.
Yeah. So it's Korean, isn't it?
It is Korean. Yeah. And I had spicy calamari on like a pancakey thing, and it was really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And they've got the barbecues too. So if you're into that kind of interactive cooking experience,
that's right.
Too,
that's cool. Your little mini barbecue on your table.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. Eh? I really enjoy that style of Korean.
Yeah.
So at Barulo, it was a food writers function for the Food Writers New Zealand, a little media organisation. And there were big platters with like Mount Cook salmon with a mango salsa and a beautiful sweet corn dish, my first of the season. And just really nice salads and big like tortillas and with the yummy guac and salsa.
Nice.
It was good. Good times. And alfajores, those that are like ice cream sandwiches.
Yeah.
They were so good with like chocolate
very
shortbread.
Cool.
Well, that's very close to my...
That's a nice segue.
So recently I've been to the Weimar Dairy, which is about 400 metres up the road from my house. It was that very hot Saturday last weekend. Sorry for all the listeners down country. Auckland had beautiful weather. Well, you kind of got shed on.
Yeah.
And my wife, who's very pregnant with two babies, she hit her first wall and she just had enough. And I got her an Eskimo pie, and it just did all the things that it should, and basically saved her life. And I highly recommend the hero in this story, Alice, is the Eskimo.
Yeah.
It's the Inuit pie.
The Inuit pie,
And
magically named.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend this summer just smashing a little bit of chocolate, a little bit of ice cream at the same time. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I've not had an Eskimo pie in years, and now I'm going to. Yeah.
Agreed.
Mm.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Hilary. It's been really, really fun, and I've learnt heaps, even though I should have known most of it.
Yes, you're very knowledgeable. Hold on, weren't we going to get Tina to share her?
Oh, Christmas Tina has a tip. Oh, yeah. Tina has a tip.
Tina, our podcast producer, taking the mic.
Hi, guys.
How's that Negroni, Tina?
It's strong as fuck.
It certainly is.
Just how you like it, though.
True. Very true. Anyway, I have a tip for all the people that get, like, favorites and chocolates that they don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
Save them all. Melt them down and make them into a rocky road.
Oh, my God, I love it.
That's actually genius.
That's actually genius.
Yeah. I did it last Christmas, and it was the bomb. And then I turned out that I like Turkish delights and stuff now.
So. Wow. Did you invent that? You should, like, trademark it or something.
That sounds like a spinoff.co.nz recipe.
Yeah. Do you want your first byline in the food section?
No, never.
Come on. I'll pay you.
Leave me off the site.
Oh. Thanks, Tina. That's a great tip.
Amazing tip. But thanks so much, Hillary.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks, Hillary.
Merry Christmas and good luck over the next few weeks. I know it's really hectic being a ham dealer.
People don't call Hillary on Christmas Day. Like,
I won't know. My phone's going off on Christmas Day.
You should change your answer phone message to, if you need any guidance with ham, there's a beautiful recipe on the spinoff.
I was actually trying
to script what we were going to put on our answer phone, so that's just solved that.
There you go.
Love it.
Or you could just give out Gregor's cell phone number.
Yeah, I don't think that'd go down very well.
No.
I still think you should do it.
Blame Simon.
But Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another 12 months. And we will be back in the new year with two more babies added to the team.
So many babies.
And exciting. We'll have to bring them all in at some point. But thank you for spending the year with us. It's been lots of fun. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.